This segment of the Bass Kayak and Beers podcast is sponsored in part by Dark Horse Tackle. Go to darkhorsetackle.com and use promo code BKB5 to save an extra $5 when you build your own box. Douglas Outdoors, serious rods for serious anglers. Norsk Lithium. The lithium kayak battery you need is just a click away. Go to norsklithium.com. Catch Outdoors, the official measuring board for all three national trails. Go to catchoutdoors.com and use promo code BKB5 to save 5% on your next online purchase. What is going on, everyone? Hope you all having an amazing Thursday. Welcome once again to the Real Life from the Bass Kayak and Beers podcast. I'm going to have a great episode for you today. I got Christian Colabelli. He is the sales manager for Spin and Cast for Douglas Rods. And we're going to be talking about rod selection. There's a lot of stuff about rod selection that a lot of us, you guys, some of you guys over there that may be new to the sport don't know about, and stuff that I'm still learning, quite frankly. And I'll be honest with you, one of the things where I started getting into this rabbit hole of bass fishing and kayak bass fishing was trying to figure out rod selection, which rods are good for what. When you are invested in a sport that you love as much as I am invested in this sport, you can spend a lot of money on rods that may not be what you're looking for. And one of the things that I struggled a lot was trying to understand the difference between action versus, strength, medium action, fast action versus heavy, medium heavy, medium. I kind of wrap my head around it. Ever since then, I've always wanted to make an episode with somebody that's very knowledgeable on rod, the ins and outs of rods, how rods are being made, the differences between guys, reel seats, the mixture that goes within the carbon fiber, fiberglass rods, the mixture that goes between them, why some rods in the same lot, in the same company are tournament rods and are more expensive than maybe an entry level rod. Why is that? So it's going to be a deep dive into rod selections and what you should know to educate yourself on rod selection. Again, I'm going to be asking questions just as you guys are, because I don't have all the answers. I don't know. I'm still learning about rod selections and all that. So if you have any questions during this show, feel free to put it in the comment sections, whether you're watching on Instagram or Facebook or YouTube. I'll try to get our guest, Christian Colabelli, to answer your questions. So feel free to put them on. And I really appreciate it. And again, feel free to subscribe to our channel, whether on Facebook, YouTube. If you're listening to our podcast on an MP3 format, you can listen on any podcast streaming platform. If you do listen on Apple Podcasts or which is the other one, Spotify, you can leave us a review and you can rate our podcast 1 through 5. And we'd definitely appreciate it. But before we bring our guest in, kind of recap my weekend in the Bass Nation. Sorry, I'm multitasking here. The Bass Nation Kayak Series. Let me shut this down. My tournament on Bassmaster Kayak Series in Possum Kingdom. It was a great time. Bite was kind of weird. There were some parts of the lake where bass were kind of bedding or starting to get into beds, but not really committed to a bed. So it was kind of hard to get them to bite. If you ever done bed fishing or spawning, you kind of understand once the female and the male decide on a nest and drop the eggs, everything, it's a lot easier to catch them because they're set on that place. But when they're still kind of like in that courtship, I would say, period. I'm not a biologist. Maybe it's the wrong term. But they're not committed to one spot specifically. It's a lot harder to catch them. There was one instance in pre-fishing where on my left was a a female with a male and kind of circling this 3 to 4 square feet area, kind of looking around where to, I guess, to set a spawn. And on the right side of that, about 15 feet away, I would say, there's the Frey from another nest and then a male garter. So it kind of shows you one bass is already, you know, have their Frey and they're just guarding the females gone. This is the male guarding them. So that means they're like, I don't know, like 2-3 weeks ahead of this other female and male that haven't committed to a spawning bed. So it was kind of weird. The north side of the lake was like that. The south side or mid side of the lake was pretty much all ready to spawn. Mostly males, kind of like already set on their areas where they're going to spawn. A little bit easier to catch, but the areas were so crowded. So I decided on Friday, pre-fishing, I found this little area where I fished before. It's kind of windblown point, kind of entering a cove, the mouth of the cove. I got some big bites. I figured that's going to be my plan A for Saturday. Saturday end up being canceled because of high wind weathers. And I was like, kind of like, man, those, I'm sure I would have gotten some bites there on Saturday. But at the same time, safety is the utmost importance, especially when you got 40 mile per hour wind. So Steve Owens did the right call in canceling day one. And I figured, well, that's going to be in part good because day two, you know, nobody's going to be fishing. Even the boat tournament that were going on Saturday were canceled. So I figured, okay, it's not going to be a lot of pressure. I can go back to that spot, windblown spot that I found in, and I felt comfortable. I can catch him. I got some big bites on Friday. But then Sunday was supposed to be windy as well. Ended up not being windy at all. So I could not get him to bite. I could see them on my down scan. I can see him on my side scan. I was throwing the same stuff I was throwing on Friday, but just were not able to get him bite. Another angler came up. He had the same set of sinker sounds. He had kind of like the same game plan, but same thing. Couldn't get the result. Ended up going back to the cove where it was super crowded with boats, another tournament, kayak anglers. Found some small 15, 16-inch bass bedding. Got to hook about 4 of them in a short span of like an hour and 30 minutes. Couldn't get my 5th one. But all in all, it was good fun. It was a tough lake. A lot of big names didn't do great. A lot of people that we're used to seeing catch a check or a trophy were even skunking on that lake. So it kind of goes to show you. It's weird because even the top 10, only one angler was from Texas. Everybody else was from outside of Texas. So that kind of shows you, like, for us Texan, everybody that had history on that history probably cost them a check because it was not working. I was kind of weird. I fished Possum Kingdom a lot, and I've never seen it that way. But anyways, that was my tournament recap. Let's get Christian Colabelli in. Christian, how you doing, man?
Mondo, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Nah, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast, man. We met at the Classic at, what was it, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago. You have fun there?
It was information overload for me because Kyle Patrick, as you know, our wonderful pro, finished 7th.
Yeah, I was trying. Good.
I don't know if people out there know, but the boat launch was about an hour and a half away from where the show was. So I was running to the boat launch. I was leaving at 4 a.m. to get to the boat launch to film him, and then driving an hour and a half back, working the show, and then running down to the other center to go film him at weigh-in. So it was great, but I was happy when it was over because it was hectic and I just wanted to get this footage and get it, you know, make sure we got some really good content as well as obviously represent the brand and talk to everyone. But man, it was a lot. It was cool though.
Yeah, man, you did a lot of hard work and we were talking about in the pre-recording, you do so much stuff, you know, both in the sales department and the social media department with Douglas Rods. Tell us a little bit of, before we get started on the topic of rod selection, I kind of want to introduce you to everybody that's watching or listening. Tell us your credentials. What, you know, what do you do with Douglas Rods and how are you so informed on rod selection?
Well, I do spinning. I guess my official title is spinning cast sales, but I also manage a lot of the pro staff. Obviously, I'm interfacing with all of these pros and guides on the bass side of Douglas. I'm doing a lot of content creation. We're a small company, so we have to be very resourceful. I'm doing a lot of the filming with these Sony A7S3s. Some editing when I can do it. Let's see. Now we finally hired a really great social media girl from Colorado, Dakota. She's great.
Oh yeah, I've talked to her. Very nice.
Yeah, she's really helping us out. She knows what she's doing. So it's been great to work with someone else and bring them into the fold. Let's see, what else am I doing? A lot of scheduling and coordinating. You know, book, we do the Douglas Opens. We're paring them down this year, only doing two because it's just too crazy. But a lot of travel, visiting shops all over the nation, just kind of, I guess I'm like a fishing missionary of sorts, you know, trying to spread the good word of, you know, Douglas Outdoors and get the brand, the awareness that it deserves, you know?
One of the things that I enjoy about working with Douglas, and I know we've seen a lot of content creators now kind of like upset at the idea of this big companies kind of buying smaller companies.
Oh,
we saw it with Rapala, what is it, Fishing 13. We see a lot of merging in the company.
You know, yeah, that was amazing.
So, but one of the things that I've been fortunate enough that Douglas has, you know, remained small, has resisted that temptation to join or merge with a bigger company. And one of the things that I really enjoy about working with Douglas is I get to meet and talk to Fred Contai, the rod designer, which is to me brings it a personal level because a lot of times when you're in this space where you create content, I have a podcast, I do a little social media, nothing fancy, nothing like the guys that have been doing it for years, you know, Bailey Agbert for Serious Angler, Alex Rod, Gene Jensen,
right.
The guy from California, I forgot his name. But anyways, it's a little humble, little podcast and little social media. But I get to speak with the rod designers, which is something not everybody can do, especially when you're partnering up with a big company. And to pick Fred Contai's brain on why is the rod designed this way and what's the ins and outs of the rods, what stands one rod out from the other, not just Douglas rod, but rods in general. It's such a privilege. And it makes me feel confident when I promote Douglas rods because I know who Fred Contai is, the rod designer, and how he is, how do I say in a positive way, like a stickler, like a perfectionist when it comes to designing the rods and, you know, getting the product. Once he designs it, it goes into production. The first rod is copped to him, and he gives the final approval whether it comes out of as he expected it. So that's a big, I consider that a privilege.
Fred is an artist.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that I would liken Fred, I don't know if you've ever read The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand, but he is basically Howard Roark. So he is designing rods for the originality and for like the sake of the art. Like he really has his own vision that he does not compromise on whatsoever. I mean, for better or for worse in some cases, but if you listen to him and if you fish with him, if you get the privilege to fish with him or if you get the honor to fish with him, you really see the poetry in motion. I mean, for instance, after Bassmaster Classic, Fred and I went around to a few shops in the Ark and met up with a few of our guides in the Arkansas area. And we actually got out on Table Rock. I mean, it was the worst conditions ever. And one other, I forget, I think Suibo was the other lake we went. But it was just the worst cold front ever. Really miserable fishing. But we ended up fishing finesse the whole day. And watching Fred utilize the DXS, the X Matrix DXS 763 XF. So that's a 7'6" medium light powered extra fast action rod, spinning rod. Watching him utilize that for a Necco rig and listening to the science behind it. I mean, this is a big 7'6" long rod with a really exquisite long tip section that allows the fish to not feel you before you feel the fish. And to watch this guy just hammer, just absolutely hammer Necco rig fish and land every fish. I mean, that is a testament to the rod design and the science behind the rod design. And you know, that technique, I don't know how many companies are saying, oh, I have a rod for, I have a Necco rig rod. Maybe there's more now, but you know, to have one that long, to really go into these longer rod territories that a lot of people are kind of wary of. Because when I talk to people at shows and I try to explain that, the first thing I ask is like, well, what is your, obviously, what's your price range? But then, you know, what length of rod are you comfortable with? And a lot of people don't want to go over 7 foot because that's, you know, like the industry standard. They're like, oh, yeah, 7 foot rod, I don't want to, you know, it's hard to get it around. But then when you get into some of these longer tapers, it makes so much sense to maintain that, like, you know, you have this longer tip section, you have more of a parabolic bend. And when you're really trying to get, you know, to keep that, to keep fish pinned, especially when you're bringing them up from long distances and, you know, you're utilizing like bottom contact techniques like the Necco, which is an interesting technique to begin with because the hook is, you know, positioned this way. You have your bait here, you have your hook with the O-ring, and you're just kind of shaking it ever so slightly. You really need that fish to be able to inhale it without feeling any tension, yeah, to be able to get a positive hook set. And that rod, I mean, there was not a miss, even if it was a small fish, even if it was a dink. I mean, you know how hard it is for a small fish to inhale like a soft plastic. Not one fish was missed. And there's over 30 caught, you know? So that's where it goes. That's where Douglas has... I know our lineup is daunting because we have so many rods in it, but when you start breaking it down and you really get dialed into a specific technique and you want to be very, you know, schooled and have the best advantage on and putting the, you know, your best odds on catching a trophy fish, that's where I feel like our rods come into play.
Yeah, and that's a big difference, I think, between, you know, your everyday tournament angler. You know, whether it's money on the line, sponsorship, you know, you're very predicated on success, you know, not just cashing checks, but making sure that your name is consistently mentioned. So therefore you get a sponsorship deal. So every bite counts versus somebody that may just do it on the weekends just to have fun. That's, I think it's a big difference. I think a lot of times I hear social media content creators says like, well, you don't need that many rods. And it's like, well, yeah, you don't. But then when there's money on the line, one way or the other, sponsorship or cash checks on tournaments, you want to have the best arsenal within your price range or your availabilities, or at least to match your talents, right? If you are an all-around angler that can feel comfortable doing pretty much every technique, then you really want rods that are going to be catered. You know, you really want technique-specific rods. That being said, you know, if you're just going out on the weekends, maybe you don't need very technique-specific rods. But in your mind, Christian, what is it so important and what is the value, let's just say, about having technique-specific rods instead of just having one all-around?
Well, let me put it this way. If you're going to play them, if you're a professional golfer and you're going to play the Masters, are you bringing two clubs or are you bringing an entire set?
Exactly.
That's why if you think about a rod lineup almost like a set of golf clubs, you know, you're not gonna hit a driver on a putting green, right? You're not gonna hit a 9-iron. You're not gonna take a 9-iron and try to hit a 350-foot drive. I mean, that's every one of these rods has a very specific function. And I guess the first place I would start with that, where it's most obvious, I would say, the first thing I would ask is, what technique are you fishing? What's your favorite technique? And if that guy, if that angler said, I really love throwing crankbaits. I love throwing crankbaits. So the first thing I'm thinking there is treble hooks. Yep. So what is the nature of a treble hook? 3 points fighting against each other. Usually a moving bait, right? Treble hook, you get a crankbait, it's moving like this. How many times have you seen a fish swipe at it, get one treble at the end?
Yep.
Right? So if you're fishing that crankbait on that on an extra fast action rod with, you know, that shuts off at the tip that has no parabolic bend, you're losing that fish. That fish is doing one head shake and that treble hook is going flying. If you're fishing it on a moderate taper rod, you know, or a medium, maybe a medium action, moderate taper rod, like our crankbait rod, the 704M, that rod will bend into the fish and it will absorb the blows of the head shake and it will keep those trebles pinned. So in that, you know, in that instance, you have selected the correct tool for the job.
Exactly. And so I think that, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I would say that's how, and I can give you 10 other scenarios. I mean, we could keep going and keep going and keep going, but it's exactly like a set of golf clubs. There is a tool, there's a right club for every situation. There's the right rod for every application.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I think that that's what a lot of people don't understand. Can you throw a crankbait on a medium heavy 7-foot rod? Yes, you can. Are you going to catch more fish than if you throw it on a dedicated crankbait rod? Probably not. Are you going to lose more fish if by not using a specific crankbait rod? Yes, you will. I remember when I started fishing, I bought a Bass Pro Shop crankbait rod.
Okay.
And I figured, you know, kind of 7.6 parabolical bend, all that. And I started using it, you know, my budget was tight. I was started using it for chatterbait. Then I would, out of 5 bites on a chatterbait, I would lose at least 3.
Wow.
And I would think like, why am I this bad? I mean, it doesn't matter how hard I set the hook. It's just, you don't get the penetration from a, you know, a beefier single hook on a rod that's designed for treble hook fishing, you know.
I agree.
And I think that's the main difference. And it all comes down to like how much you're willing to invest. Now, I get it. A lot of people may not have the resources to spend that much. And we'll talk a little bit about what rods to buy if you have a limited budget, you know, what you concentrate on. And a lot of it, like you said, it's going to be depending on what type of fishing do you want to do. For example, if somebody loves jig fishing and it says, hey, I have a budget, I want to get, you know, I don't have, you know, money for about 3 rods. Well, what do you love to do most? Jig fishing. Okay. Well, that's going to be different than somebody that says, I want 3 rods because that's my budget, but I love crankbait fishing. Totally different. Totally different aspects. I wanted to break down a little bit about, because this is something that I had trouble understanding, and it's the what they call the power, medium power, heavy power, medium heavy. What can you tell us about that? And again, for those that are watching on the live show, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube, feel free to put your questions or your comments on the comment section. We'll try to do our best to answer your questions. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, the rod selection. I know for bass fishing, a lot of it is leaf line, medium, medium heavy, heavy, and extra heavy. What's the difference in it? You know, what is exactly a power on a rod, and how does that translate to baits?
Well, here's the thing. That's kind of an interesting... That's a rabbit hole question, because I do think that every single rod manufacturer varies slightly. There is no universal power system that fits across the board. So in my opinion, you've got to look at other things as well. You got to look at the lure rating on the rod. You know, like for instance, one rod might be rated 3/8 to 2 ounces. Okay. And also the line rating, you know. How much, what's the heaviest amount, what's the lightest amount of line it can handle, what's the heaviest amount of line, and then look at the power in conjunction with all of that. So rather than to try to not confuse everyone, maybe I'll just speak in terms of our powers so we can use that as a standard. Okay. So I'm just going to pick whatever rod I have here. Let's see. Okay. So this is, we'll talk about this rod series in a little bit later on, but this is our new era series. This is a C745F. Okay. So the first thing that you've got to look at here is C. What is C? Casting.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got a casting rod. Now, what is the 7.4?
Length of the rod.
Okay, good. So we have a 7.4 casting rod. What is the five?
The power.
Okay, so what is that power in our rod?
Heavy.
That's a medium heavy.
Medium heavy, yeah. Heavy six, extra heavy seven, right?
Exactly. So for us, that's slightly different because I know certain rod manufacturers will call a five power, and actually they'll call it a heavy rod, okay? So that's where I'm saying there's not that universal.
Yes, that industry standard kind of legend.
But that's why. So if you looked at our ounce rating here, 7/16 to 2 ounces. So that, I mean, 2 ounces is a lot, right, for a conventional rod. But if you feel the rod, it's extremely light. So to me, our stuff is almost like, even though it's a medium heavy, it's almost like a medium heavy plus. That's the best way that I would say that it's like. Between it, because it's so light, yes, it feels more like a medium heavy, but because it can handle, you know, a 2 ounce, like a real heavy, you could throw like a small glide bait on this.
Yeah.
I mean, is it the ideal rod for that? No, but it can work. You could throw a 6-inch mag draft on this all day long. I mean, you got to have a rod with some backbone. So, and then the F is the actual action. So that's a fast action. So we have a 7'4" medium heavy fast action rod right here. So for me, that's a great, I mean, this is obviously, if you know, I mentioned Kyle Patrick before, the 745, the DXC 745. So that's our high end line, our X Matrix. That's his favorite rod. He does everything on it. He jigs on it. He frogs on it. I mean, he's one of those guys that will make the most out of a little. So I know I said there's the right, you know, there's the right tool for every job, but for the style of fishing that he's doing, where he's doing a lot of jig fishing and a lot of power techniques, that rod is perfect. And the thing, I mean, I know I was mentioning this before too, I think the thing that sets Douglas apart from a lot of other brands is the secondary action of the rod. So even though that's a fast action rod, you would think that, like, you know, it shuts off. Get it out of our brand new Douglas, can you see, or Douglas rod sock here.
Oh, you got new rod socks coming out?
Yes, we just, they're on the site now. We just started selling. We got a few different ones.
I'm going to get myself some then.
Oh, absolutely.
Is it going to be nylon or neoprene?
It's just, it's the, yes, the standard.
Nylon.
Yes, no neoprene yet, but, well, you know, it's the weave, the nylon weave.
Yeah.
We'll maybe look at that avenue in the future. But, you know, this has got a stout backbone, and it's a fast action tip. But when you really have a fish on, I mean, look, that'll bend pretty far down into the blank, and I'm not really testing it at all. Like, if you can imagine, with a fish, it probably shuts off right here, and it'll really keep a fish cushioned. So you could throw, like, if I was going to throw, like, a super heavy crankbait, I could – consider throwing it on this rod because of that parabolic secondary action. And that's one thing that Fred has kind of implemented into a lot of these rod designs. I think he's very, very conscious of that. And that's what he's worked in to kind of, you know, give Douglas its mark. And I think the proof is in the pudding, because you really don't lose a lot of fish on these rods. If you get them hooked, I honestly don't even know if I've lost one since I started fishing these things. You know,
I know what you mean.
Which is crazy. I mean, it's crazy to say that, and you think I'm just, you know, blowing smoke here, but I'm not. I would tell you straight up. I mean, I guess everyone says I would tell you straight up, but I really would. Like, I'm such a gear junkie. I mean, if we walked out into my garage right now, you'd see 50. I mean, I have one of the craziest high-end rod collections you could – ever behold, probably. You know, I'm a fanatical swim bait angler, and I just have tested, like, brands from around the world to see what the best one is. Out of pocket, I just, you know, I'll pay crazy sums. I don't care, but I want to see what the best of the best is. And I can honestly say, like, in terms of balance and performance, Douglas is up there with a lot of them, for sure.
We got a question from USA Kayak Fishing Magazine. Says, do you have a pro to fit me to a rod? I don't know what that means, pro to fit me to a rod. If you can specify that question a little bit more.
Yeah.
Not sure. Do you understand the question by any chance?
Maybe he needs like a
pro staff member to fit him with the rod?
Yeah, like to hip him to the rod, like to show him the rod, maybe. I'm not. Yeah, specify that a little more. I mean, we'll find someone.
Definitely, and also Derek. I'm not even going to try it because I know I'm going to botch your last name. But he says, don't forget to mention the difference between power and action. Yeah, I was just about to go to that. Many people, rod sponsors still have medium action, which is incorrect. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like when we come to bass fishing, I know for crappie, it's light, medium heavy, extra heavy. That's for bass fishing, what's the lowest you should go with as far as power?
I would say medium light. I mean, for us, our medium light, our three power, that's some of our like core rods in the lineup, like the 6-8-3 extra fast.
Even though I love that rod, by the way. I use it for throwing like the child's play rig, which is kind of like a weedless net rig, I would say, and it is amazing.
It's an amazing blade bait rod. That's what it was really designed for. But yeah, but I mean, that's a medium light rod, but it has a stout backbone on it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, it's very hard without picking these things up. It's hard to generalize because our rods are so dialed into very specific techniques. Like, again, we have two different drop shot rods, or what we consider drop shot rods. We have a 6-10-3F, so that's a 6'10", three power medium light F fast action rod. So it has a little bit more, you know, forgiveness in the tip because some guys really like to, you know, let that bait kind of soak and let the fish really kind of hook themselves. And we have a 6-10-3XF, so we have that same rod in an extra fast tip that is a little bit more responsive, that you can really, you know, you do way less to set the hook. I mean, they kind of.
That's the one that you, I know, I don't know if that's the one you were talking about. I remember when talking to Fred Quintai, he was just finished designing a drop shot rod for fishing in grass, which is like, that's crazy. It was like, I never even considered using that one.
But that's a different application, exactly. Yeah. Because you know you're into, you don't want to rip that thing out of the grass quickly. You want to give them time to eat it in there, right? And then, you know, if you're in open water, it's a totally different thing. So I think he's trying to give these anglers, if you're really dialed in and you like to fish a certain technique in a certain place or a certain way, you can do it with Douglas rods. There's so many in that lineup that will fit that niche. It's almost crazy, but yes, that's how he thinks.
And what about talking to medium light? Let's break it down with power. What is power translated to the bait? We got medium light. We talked about it. What types of baits would you use with a medium light bait?
Okay.
In general terms, we're not going to go specific because I know it changes. It's a fluid subject, but.
Okay, so drop shot, medium light's great for drop shot. It's great for a Ned rig. It's great for a hair jig. Great for a blade bait if you like throwing it on spinning rods. I mean, up here in New York, I know I'm saying blade bait, and probably a lot of your listeners are like, wait, I'm throwing that on a moderate casting rod. You can absolutely do that, but we throw them up here, or the guys up here, you know, the New York angler will throw that on a 6-8. That 6-8-3 extra fast on that short rod, because you know when you're jigging off the bottom in these real, you know, you're fishing it off a boat, that will still launch a half ounce blade bait a country mile, and then you don't have to do as much on the hook set since you're jigging it up and you have that extra fast tip. They kind of hook themselves, and then you get that parabolic action. Whereas like that softer rod with the blade, the way they eat a bait, you might miss more fish. So, you know, deeper water, you want that responsive tip.
What about medium power? What would a medium power, again, speaking in general terms, there's always exception to the rule, but
yeah, medium power. No, medium is a great all-arounder. Like our 704, our spinning rod, our 704F, that's like a great all-around. I can do everything. If I had one rod, I can just, oh, man, like I forgot to bring all my stuff. Let me go pick this one up. You could throw a Senko with it. You could throw, You could throw a Necco on that. Just a variety of soft plastic techniques. I mean, you could even throw a crankbait. Not ideal, but you could get away with throwing them on that if you like throwing it on a spinning rod. On the other side, if you're talking about 704M casting, we already talked about that crankbait rod, but that's a really good taper for throwing square bills. Some guys will even throw jerk baits on that. You know, that medium's a great power for jerk bait, I think. You know, just kind of, you're not overpowering the fish. You still have, you know, good for like finesse applications, but also good for, I think of jerk baiting as like a finesse power application because, you know, it's like in the middle. It's this very specialized technique. So, you know, I would say medium is a good kind of all around where you don't need a lot of like a micro jig, maybe like a finesse football jig you could throw on a medium too. You know, you don't need to overpower the fish. You don't need to really crank the hook point through the fish's mouth, like on a big bait where you got to really get it through. Maybe you're using lighter line on that, maybe 10-pound braid to like a 10 or 12 pound, 8 to 12 pound leader, something like that, even down to 6, you know, something where you don't need to really crank the rod, the hook through the fish's mouth. Like you don't need the rod to really absolutely jack them to get that hook point through. That's what I would think medium is good for.
Nothing like a topwater, I would say, like a topwater frog, right?
No, but like certain topwater, that's a really good point. Like a
pebble hook topwaters. Yeah.
Yeah, treble hook topwater is a different story. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's what you want, a medium power. You want that rod to have a little bit of give. And again, you want to cushion the treble, but you don't want it too soft to where they're able to just shake it right off. You got to have a little bit of tip section.
All right. So going back to the listener's questions, USA Kayak Fishing Magazine says, how would you describe a custom rod to someone that uses a Walmart combo?
I don't know if someone that uses a Walmart combo would even necessarily understand a custom rod, but I mean, I would start with saying placing a custom rod into someone's hands, I would say the balance is probably better right off the bat. If you're getting a Walmart combo, it's going to be tip heavy. There's no way that it's balanced out. It's probably going to be really, the weight distribution is going to be off. Obviously the components that you're using are not going to be as high end. You're probably using a lot of very, very cheap guides with inserts that could be like knockoff ceramic, you know, not high end ceramic guides. You're using probably a really, lower quality, like modulus blend of, composite or graphite. It'll be moderate though. That rod will be more like, you know,
the all-around typical rod, yeah.
Yeah, if you look at I don't want to throw any brand under the bus, but you know the one I'm talking about.
That yeah.
You know.
Ugly yeah. Stick?
Yeah, exactly.
Those things will last, but yeah.
They're cool, man, but they weigh a ton, you know? Yeah. Like, I mean, they're
a broomstick.
They're made not to be broken, you know? Yeah. And
they don't break, but.
There's no sensitivity. That's the other thing. I would say sensitivity.
Yeah.
Is a massive thing. I would say the ergonomic reel seat too. I mean, on the Douglas rods, to where you can feel like on some of our models, you know, you have that exposed blank and you can really like feel every single, you can feel more of the vibration and travel throughout the rod. What else did I not? Certain custom rods will even do, they'll do a crazy orientation on guides. Like they'll do a spiral wrap. Like a lot of my rods have spiral wrap on it, like acid wrap. So they'll start as casting and they'll finish as spinning. And that helps with casting distance and it helps alleviate torque when you're throwing big swim baits.
Nice. So, that's an interesting point.
Yeah.
So we talk about medium light, medium, and then medium heavy. What is the difference? You know, what scenario would I prefer medium heavy over medium or heavy?
I'd say when you start getting into really, really jig fishing, and I'm, you know, like a 3/8, especially like a 1/2 ounce jig. If you're walk me through this, like, yes, yes, me.
Yes. So it says, you, USA Kayak Fishing, do you have someone who can walk me through a selection based upon my choices?
Yes.
Well, yes, that's what we have, Christian, here. You can ask the questions. Keep in mind, we do have to keep the show rolling, but throw up some questions, and then later on we can maybe get your contact and talk to you.
Yeah, and tell me what you want to throw, what you're looking to throw, and what you're looking to fish, and what species and where. And then we can definitely pick something up.
All right, so going back to medium heavy, something more like a jig.
Yes, like even like a heavy, like I like to throw bullworms, like, you know, like big, those big 8-inch worms. Like I'll throw that on like a, you know, R745 or medium heavy, or, you know, because like more of like a heavy plus. Like again, I'm looking at that ounce rating too, though.
Yeah.
You know, like that's not equal across all boards. Like a medium heavy for like, if I picked up like a 13 fishing muse, it's rated 3/8 to 1 ounce, and that's considered a medium heavy. And for us, that would probably be considered a medium, you know? So that's, again, you got to look at the line weight, the lure rating, and also obviously the power as well. But yes, jigs, heavy Texas rigs. Carolina rig, maybe you can even go to a heavy on that. Again, let's see, what else? Medium heavy
Texas rig.
Definitely Texas rig. Anything where you need a little bit more backbone to get the hook point through, or you're handling a larger bait.
Yeah,
you know, that's, again, like you don't want to, you're not going to go to a you're not going to a gunfight with a fork, you know, like if you got to throw a big heavy jig, you got to have a rod that can get that jig through the fish's mouth. I mean, even some smaller frogs, I would throw in a medium heavy to be able to walk it, you know, where the rod's not overpowering that action. You need to have a tip section with some of these baits to be able to manipulate the bait properly.
Excellent. And what about heavy and let's just combine them, heavy and extra heavy?
Okay.
Rods, we're talking about glide baits, big ounce jigs.
That's my specialty. And here's an 807 prototype with a Depths 250.
807. So that's.
So this is an 807. This is an 8-foot. This is an extra heavy power rod. And take a guess. What do you think this is rated to, Armando?
The weight?
Yeah.
Well, before I even guess, I'm going to tell you a little story. So my first combo for swim bait was before I got involved with Douglas Rods, was I bought at Fun and Sun Tackle, I bought an Abu Garcia combo that was 7'11" heavy, and it was rated for up to 4 ounces.
Okay.
And it's a broomstick. Like, it's a heavy, heavy rod. Every time I cast out, I'm like, after 10 casts, my shoulder is like, yeah, this is nuts. If I don't get another bite on my next cast, I'm putting this down.
You're shot.
Then I met Kevin Johnson, got on board with Douglas. And one of my first rods I ordered with Douglas was a 8-foot long, heavy rod. And to my surprise, it was rated for, I think, up to 4 ounces. No, like 6 ounces, I think. Yeah. It was. Like after 6 ounces.
2 to 6, yep.
Yeah, 2 to 6 ounces. And it weighted probably 1/3 than that Abu Garcia Veritas rod.
Yes.
I couldn't understand. It's like, how is it that this rod is longer? It's an inch longer. I can cast a bait that's 2 ounces heavier than I would be able to cast with this Veritas rod, and yet it is about 1/3 of the weight of this Veritas rod. So when you ask me how much do I think, I'm going to guess somewhere between 8 and 10 ounces, that rod.
So this is rated 6 to 14. This is
6 to 14.
This is a big Bertha. This one's really made to throw giant baits, but I'll tell you, if you want to throw a Depths 250 all day long and absolutely fling it with like minimal effort, this is the rod for it. It is so light compared to others in its class. It's so balanced, and we also extended the handle 1 inch to really. I think our previous version was an inch too short, just coming from like a very heavy swim bait background, this one tucks under the arm perfectly. And it just, you know, you have this large foregrip as well. I know a lot of Japanese anglers will choke up and like fish that, like they'll fish it this way under their arm while they're reeling.
Yeah.
So you have that ability.
Kind of like a musky setup.
Yeah. And it's also, how long this has been out in the elements for, if I can do this right now. But yes, this is a detachable handle too. So you can travel with it. This is a big JDM thing. This has been going on for years. It's just the exposed carbon fits right into this hood right here. And then you just put it right in.
That makes it a lot easier to carry, especially when you're kayak fishing. It's you have to travel.
Just line it right up. Good to go. I think I overextended a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's just I've been fishing the detachable handle stuff for probably the last 4 or 5 years. The big mega bass rods have been doing it. And this Japanese company called Zanuck, really high-end, super high-end swim bait rods. They have been doing that forever. And, dude, there's no difference, man. Once that carbon's in there, it's in there, you know? So I see no negative side effects. If anything, it's a blessing because you can fit in rod lockers.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, you can't get the 8-footer on certain boats. So
yeah,
I love that design. And it's strong as heck, man. I mean, that thing is – I've seen some serious fish and no side effects yet, you know.
Now the one of these things that impressed me about Douglas, especially the X Matrix, is their big swim bait rods. Incredible. That's where you really see the difference between that and I think a lot of people, I mean, kind of don't understand the difference. When I'm talking about the Viridis rod that I had, again, a rod that is casting weight for lures 2 ounces less than the X Matrix and weighs like 3 times more. The price of that rod was $150. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Douglas X Matrix, I don't remember. You can tell me the price. I don't remember. Something like $400, something close to $400. How much?
$360.
So almost double. But that's where you see the dip. Well, at least a little bit more than double. But that's you get what you pay for. You might think, oh, that's an expensive rod. And again, I'm not trying to get people to buy something there out of their budget. But if you have the budget, you do fish a lot, especially if you're tournament fishing, you do yourself a favor when you're able to, you know, purchase a high end rod, a tournament rod. Let's talk a little bit about the difference because I think a lot of people, and myself included, don't understand the difference between what they call an entry level rod and a tournament rod or an elite rod. What's the difference other than obviously the prices, right? Because one's entry level rod's going to be like somewhere in the $100. Tournament rods, you know, G Loomis goes up to almost $800 in some of their rods. But just in general, what are the differences? What makes one rod more, you know, an elite rod, and what makes one, you know, rod a entry level rod?
There's several factors. One more thing about this swim bait rod that I didn't mention that I wanted to mention, then I'll jump right into that. But you see this double footed guide? I don't know if you've ever even noticed that, but these double footed guides go all the way up the rod. So they're super durable. That's not, I mean, like here's a conventional rod. So you have your double footing. First guide, second guide, third guide, and then your fourth guide, it's all single foot all the way up.
Yeah.
So this thing is made to withstand abuse. That's something, you know, that a lot of production swim bait rods, maybe they're starting to do it now, but a lot of people did not think about that, you know, because, oh, this adds weight, you know, that adds weight to the rod, but really it doesn't. And when you're throwing baits this big, it just helps, in my opinion, it helps have that reinforcement. So just another quick point on that rod, because it's such a great production rod that is unmatched in balance and power and just castability. So what makes a high-end rod? There's several factors. I would say the quality of guides, the number of guides, the actual blank construction. So with Douglas, a lot of our technology goes into the actual blank construction. That's, you know, what separates one rod brand from another. Like, I mean, you mentioned Shimano rods before. If you see that X Pride, it's got that X weaving all over, you know, the rod, and that's their technology to have that strong, you know, durable rod that's still light, but can really, you know, it looks cool too. So it's, you're basically wrapping carbon in this direction. They'll do it this way and then wrap over it. So with our rod, a lot of, like I said, that secondary action is a huge thing. A lot of the research goes into the blank, and we have some of the strongest light, the lightest and strongest blanks, especially for like the weight to strength ratio. That's what we kind of pride ourselves on. We're using, on the X Matrix, we're using Fuji Alkanite guides. We're using a custom Fuji real seat with an exposed blank, like I said, so you can really kind of transmit that vibration. And, you know, we're using the very high quality EVA foam, which, you know, certain people love it, certain people don't. There's some guys that really love cork. I love
EVA. Especially in Texas. They love the
cork. They love cork. They love cork. That's cool. Well, then our eras will hopefully be a massive hit down there, you know? So I really think it goes into, and it goes into the type of modulus, high modulus carbon fiber that you're using. You know, some of these rods will be 20 ton, 30 ton. The higher modulus you get, the lighter the rod gets, but also the crisper that it gets. So the trick is to really find the balance to where you're not making something that's overly stiff and brittle. You need to have something that's light and pliable, which is really what we're going for with our blank construction. That's our own proprietary blend of, you know, carbon fiber and composite.
That's another thing I think that a lot of people, including myself, that I didn't understand at first. And I don't want to feel like I'm talking down to anybody that's new. I was new to this, and I'm still new, relatively new. But to share some of the things that I've learned, when you talk about, you know, generic brands, and I'm not going to mention one in specific, a lot of it is just blanks that have been designed for years, and it's just old school blanks that are very simple. And then people, and these companies just buy them, what do you call it? Like, you know, just a lot of them, like just the generic, you know, moderate or medium heavy, not specific, just the generic. I'm looking for the word, but I forgot, but they just buy it in bulk. That's the way I'm looking. Yeah. They'll buy it in bulk and then they sell them versus a company like, and Douglas, not the only one that does that, let's be fair, but, some of these great companies like Douglas, like other ones that are out there, the reason why they're more expensive and they're so successful is because, like you mentioned, proprietary design. Like, there's a rod that's specifically designed. For example, with Douglas, it's Fred Contai. He designs the rods.
Yes.
They go out and test it. They see, you know, if it came out the way they were hoping it came out, if it doesn't, go back to the drawing board, which costs money, versus just buying a bulk of generic blanks have been using since the 1940s. I'm exaggerating, but with generic materials, you know, and obviously that's going to be a lot less expensive, but you eventually get what you pay for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're paying for the quality of the componentry and the design. You know, another, obviously, we got to shout out Megabass because they have so many interesting blanks. Like, they'll design very technique specific blanks, you know, like their 110 stick is made to fish the Vision 110, and it's got a really cool taper where obviously, and we have the same thing, but jerkbait, like we mentioned before, is a really interesting technique because it's a power finesse technique. You need a rod that's crisp enough and has a tip to be able to impart the action, but then you need a rod that bends down to keep those treble hook pins because they're pinned because they are very light and trebles that have the propensity to bend out if you fight them hard, especially, you know, certain guys will fish jerk baits on very light braid to leader like myself. Like, if you're going to do that, you got to back off the drag and let the rod do the work and hope that it trusts in your rod to be able to land the fish. And then hopefully everything works in synchronicity. And you know, again, shouting out Megabass because they do the same thing. They have that 110 stick that has a really good tip section, then it bends down into the blank, just like our 684, our 6 foot eight DXC 684, 6 foot eight medium powered fast action casting rod. It's the right length, short, under 7 feet, allows you to really jerk it without, you know, hitting the water or being too long, especially if you're on a boat. And then it keeps fish pinned because it has that secondary parabolic bend that I keep mentioning. I'll beat it the dead horse.
No, so, I actually used that rod.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool.
I've added. I had actually a video on my social media on Instagram where I had the jerkbait. I'm working the jerkbait over this pile.
Okay.
And right when I was gonna like, okay, well, let me pull it over because this brush pile is kind of coming up, and it got hung up right, you know, at the water's edge, you know, right where it was, I was trying to get it over. And as I'm pedaling my way to my jerkbait to get it unhooked, because it's right at the surface, I see this 20-inch, and Jeremy McCormick can attest to this. He was fishing with me. This comes out of the water, hits it, and unhooks it out of its log and hooks himself with it. So I didn't have to even set the hook in it.
No way.
And I was like, and I'm fighting him. I don't know. I'm trying to fight it and not horse it, trying to understand what the heck am I going to do, because I don't know how good the hooks say. He hooked himself into this.
Yeah.
It was a Vision 110, which is those
Katsuaji outbarbs.
Yeah, those are very sticky, but very, very thin. If you horse it, it's gonna rip a hole in its mouth and you're gonna lose it, or sometimes it'll break those hooks. But I eventually got it to land. But it was like, it showed me how good that rod is, that I was able to kind of like, I in my mind I had Caleb's words that me and him got to talk a little bit about jerkbait rods, and one of the things he told me is like, trust the rod. When you get, you know, especially with the Douglas rod, it says just trust the rod. When you're working a jerkbait, trust it. Don't try to horse it. Don't put the drag line too hard. Don't set the hook too hard. It's just lean on it, tire it out, and trust that the rod is going to do its job. And that's what I did. And I was like, that's part of my learning curve. You know, you don't always have to horse the fish into the boat. If you have a good rod, you know,
that's absolutely right. You, with a jerkbait, back off the drag and let the rod do the work and let that thing tire itself out.
Which is very different from, let's say, frog fishing, right? Like, you don't want that thing to fight its way through the grass, and then that grass is going to go on top of the line, and eventually it'll leverage.
You don't get an inch.
Leverage. You know, that's the thing. I think this goes a lot in rod selection, why you don't use a jerkbait rod for frogging rod. You know, if you're working lily pads or grass like Caddo Lake, you know, you get all this grass, those bass start digging in. The weight of that grass is going to go now on top of the line. So it actually, if that fish is going right, that grass is going to hold him the opposite direction, which eventually could get that hook out of its mouth.
Yep, directional change. Exactly.
And I think that's important to understand. Why is it the weight and the power is so important?
You need for frogging. If you're going to fish frog in heavy slop, okay, you need extreme backbone to be able to lift that fish out of the slop. I mean, I'm a huge frog fisherman. It's a passion of mine. Before I got into swim baiting, I would literally take like three frog rods out with different frogs rigged up and just fish that because I was so into it. And I would fish them in crazy scenarios too, like open water, thick slop, obviously. But like, I try to be creative with where I fish this thing or these things. And you need to have that's another tough rod to pin down, because you need to have one that is light enough with a good enough tip that's not just a broomstick pool cue to be able to walk the frog. I mean, you know, some of these frogs are light. You know, if you're throwing a Jackal Kiara, right? Like
I love that frog.
That's one of my favorite frogs of all time. And it catches giants, right?
Yep. So
you know the drawing power of that. So that's a half ounce frog, but it's closer to 3/8 if you really weigh it.
Yeah.
Okay? Because I did. I was like, there's no way. But if you try to throw that frog on an extra heavy rod, like a normal frog rod, you can do it. But
you're skipping that rod every time you work. You're pulling it out of the water.
Exactly. Exactly. So you got to find – you need to then find a rod like our 765 Extra Fast that has enough tip section and enough backbone to manipulate a bait that is that small, but then still have enough lifting power to get it out of really thick slop. And here's – something that's controversial that I don't know if everyone will agree with here, but just from serious trial and error and so much time in the water, I am not one of those guys that sets upon immediate blow up. Like
I think, correct on that.
But you know, if you listen to like the tactical bassing guys, they're like Matt Allen is just like set immediately. I don't believe in letting him eat it because they'll I just don't think that – I don't know if I buy that philosophy. Every time that I have let that fish, that I have really trusted the rod to be able to feel the weight of that fish and to really let him eat it and give him like – sometimes I'll give him 4 or 5 seconds, especially if they're in slop, to reposition that thing and then crank on him. I've had more success that way than with the immediate hook set. And then again, that's a lot of the rod you're trusting in for that to be able to pin them, you know?
Matt Allen, and I love tactical bassing. That's one of the things. And now I'll say this. As a new angler, I started watching tactical bassing. And
right.
I know we're getting off subject. And I had to stop watching it for a second when I started because I could not understand. It's like I didn't even speak in English. Like I don't understand what they're talking about. They're so in depth in you know in their breakdowns that I was like, I need to learn more in order to start speaking their language. And once I did, I was like, okay, now I enjoy it more. But Matt Allen has some kind of interesting takes that as I've grown as an angler, listen, this is a guy that's been doing this for years and who am I to question him? But some of them, like that's one example of one that I don't agree with. The other one, I remember he was talking about crankbait reels and his deep, he was talking about what reel he uses for deep diving crankbait. And he uses like an 8-speed for diving crankbait. I'm like, you're nuts. You're using like anybody that's tried to use like a 20-foot dive crankbait, deep diving crankbait on an 8-speed reel, you're going to wear your wrist out.
You're doing so
by
much.
The third game. Yeah, you're doing way too much work. It's like, no, I don't. Again, I don't question Matt. I love, by the way, I love those guys. I love what they're doing. Big fans of that. But
me too.
I was like, damn, an 8-speed with a deep diving crankbait? That is insane.
It's like like biking like up a hill. You wouldn't, you know, it's the same kind of
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But so I know we had you for over an hour and I don't want to keep you long too long. Again, if people are watching, feel free to leave the comments. Your questions, Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. We'll do our best to get them answered. But I wanted to do kind of like a rapid fire. I'll name you a bait, and you tell me what the rods that you should be using. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Nedrick.
Medium light, extra fast.
Medium light, extra fast. How long? Like length?
6'10".
6'10". Spinning or casting? Is that mine or yours?
I think that's mine.
All right, cool. Jerkbait. I know we mentioned it, but just to recap it.
6'8", medium, fast action.
That's the one I use. Frogs.
I like 7'3", extra fast.
Jigs. Half ounce jig.
7'45". Definitely 7'45". So 7'4", medium heavy or medium heavy plus.
Crankbaits.
What type of crankbait?
10-foot dive, like a DT10.
2. No, you know what? That 7'4" moderate action.
What about a square bill?
Sorry. 7 foot. I meant 7 foot medium powered moderate action.
All right. Square bills.
Same thing. If I'm throwing bigger ones, I'll use a 7. I'll use 2. If they're like a 1 ounce, I'll use a 7.63 moderate fast. And I'll, if they are really big, I'll use a 7.64. So 7'6" medium power moderate fast. But our moderate fast, that rod I'm talking about can handle up to 2 ounces.
Big spooks. Like topwater spooks, but big ones, not the little ones.
Like lunker punker size.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Well, okay. Our 7.84 is phenomenal. So that's a 7'8" medium power, but that's rated up to 2.5 ounces. That's great. Or 7.65 fast. That's rated up to 3 ounces. Either one of those is really good. If they're really big spooks, I'm going to our 7.11.6 FD. That's our detachable handle. 7.11. It's got the right handle to be able to throw that, to bomb it a long way. And it's got the right tip section to walk it. And you won't wear yourself out because our rods are not heavy. They're light.
Not at all. Not. It's impressive how light they are.
I love big spooks. That's one of my favorite techniques, man. I should have done this from my garage so I could just pull out bait containers and show you what I've amassed.
Big glide baits.
What's the ounce rating?
What's the typical ounce rating? 4? Well, I usually want guys.
If it's a 4, I'm probably throwing it on our 7.11.6 FD or our 8.05 FD. Either one of those. If it's like a 2 ounce glide bait, I'll throw it on that 7.84 that I was talking about. And if it's a Mondo, if it's like 6 ounces or larger, you could throw that you could get away with throwing that on the 8.05 and the 7.11. I mean, they'll handle it, but I like to really have a rod like fish almost a power up to be able to throw it like it's a Senko. So that 8.07 for me, like if I'm throwing a Depth 250 all day, no question, that's the rod I'm throwing.
All right, last one. I'm going to throw a curveball here. Well, maybe you'll know exactly. 1/2 ounce floater spoon.
That's a good one too. I would throw that on our 7.64 fast because it's only 1/2 ounce. That has the right tip and that has the right parabolic bend, and that's kind of a weird bite. You know, so you really need the rod to do a lot of the work on that. But if I'm throwing a Magnum floater spoon, no question, it's on that 7.84. That is like a Magnum flutter spoon dream rod.
What and again, not to keep you too long, but two subjects that I wanted to cover. One of them is action.
Yes.
You know, what do we dumb it down for us? What is, you know, fast action, extra fast, medium action?
Okay.
What are the differences and how does that translate into choosing a bait?
Okay. So for me, extra fast action is always usually bottom contact application. You need something that's very responsive that can get a hook with minimal effort and minimal feedback. You can get a hook into the fish's mouth. That's extra fast to me. So if I'm doing any type of Texas rig,
jigs,
but even like the outlier there is that blade bait on the spinning rod with the 6.83 extra fast. Cause even with that extra fast action, the fact that it's trebles, the way that they eat that reactive, it sets the hook and it they don't come off. So yeah. I don't know what to say about that. So, okay. So wait, so that's extra
fast. Extra fast. Yeah.
So fast to me is the most versatile one. That's the one you can do the most damage with. So you could get away with pretty much anything on that. You could throw, depending on what the rod is, I mean, you could throw a jig on that. You could throw a flutter spoon on that. You could throw a glide bait on that. You could throw topwater on that. You could throw pretty much anything on that. It just depends what the ounce rating is and what the rod length and line weight is too. The moderate is really when you're getting into the treble hook application, you really want a rod to be able to To be able to cushion the bait. Again, like trebles are the ones where you – that's where you experience the most heartbreak. Because think about it. You have multiple hook points fighting against each other and a fish shaking around and fighting, jostling it. Whereas once you get a jig hook in there, I mean, you know, that's the power of like if you're fishing like this – like this defiant line through right here where you hook them and then the bait goes all the way up the rod and they're left with just hooks in their mouth. Dude, you got them hooked, man. They're not coming loose. So that's where that moderate action has to cushion the physics of all those hook points working against each other. And with a fish that's violently fighting for its life, for you to be able to get it back to the boat.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point for moderate, because action rods, I think a lot of people, and myself included, didn't understand. It's like when you're talking about a single hook, you want that, you know, penetration past the barbed wire, and that'll, you know, very hard for them to come off out of that. But treble hooks, especially like a Vision 110, where they're light, you know, they can bend a little bit more easy, obviously, because they're a little bit lighter. They're not, the barbed wire is not what's holding them. It's the multiple, you know, jerk bait, it's going to have three treble hooks. So that's nine hooks. So it's going to be really depending on multiple anchoring points, you know, in the fish's mouth. And that's right. Why it's more of like you need it to be a little bit more forgiving. So it won't rip it out of its mouth.
Right. And that's where that parabolic action comes into play. Because like when you get these bigger glide baits, think about not only do you have giant treble hooks, like they're not light treble hooks, but now you have treble hooks that are attached to a bait that weighs a lot that the fish can leverage against you. Yeah. So, and if you're fishing glide baits like I do, braid to leader, like heavy braid to leader, to shock leader via FG knot, you need to have a rod that is forgiving enough, like it's powerful enough to get those hooks through. Because again, that's a heavy bait. And, you know, depending on how they eat it, it's not always a clean eat. And then you need something that's going to be able to have that parabolic bend and be light enough to not fatigue you to where you move the rod or you're weighed down by it. So there's a lot of factors that come into this. That's why these rods, like Fred really spent a ton of time researching and testing these things and making sure that they perform under the most, you know, the way they should for the technique that they're designed for.
And last question I wanted to cover is rod length. I know a lot of times we think of like, well, when it's, you know, if I'm bombing out a bait, like crankbaits, you know, especially if you have a deep crankbait, the more distance you have between you and, you know, your cast, the longer that bait, it's going to stay in its strike zone. Because obviously it's going to be very dependent. It's a floating bait. So it's going to be depending on you constantly reeling. So it'll get to your bait the far to it, it'll get to its designed depth the farther you are from them.
Right.
That, you know, the farther the cast, the more time it's going to spend on that designed depth. Whereas if you're doing like a short cast, that thing is just going to do like a V. It's going to go up and that it's going to go down, up, and that's it. It only stays like maybe a foot at its designed depth, which it's not going to get you a bite unless you're, you know, digging in deeper than where the fish are. So, but I know that's one of the reasons I know a lot of people will, you know, certain techniques would go for a longer rod versus shorter rod. For example, maybe you're frogging. You're not necessarily bombing a cast out because there could be a lot of grass between you and the fish. You don't want that. You're more precise casting, short cast. What other factors goes into the rod length other than that?
Unless you're a bank angler and you got to bomb it out, because that's what, you know, like from frogging, when I fish frog on the bank, I want to have those bomber casts, but then it's even harder because exactly what you said, the more distance that you put between them, you're trying to set the hook in a bunch of slop. And, you know, that's a really hard hook set that's why you really need the right rod to make that happen. I would say that, like you said, with the general rule of thumb is the longer the rod, the further you're going to be able to cast. But also keep in mind with this stuff keep in mind that the weight of the lure that you're throwing, try to find a rod that, say I'm like 3/8 to, like that, for instance, that say I'm like 3/8 to 1 ounce. Find a lure that sits in the middle of that ounce rating, and you'll be able to almost spool your reel probably, because you're sitting in the sweet spot of the rod. You're not overloading the rod. You're loading it up just right to where it's really using, you know, you're not using muscle to cast it. You're actually using the rod to throw the bait because that's loading the rod correctly. So I think that has, that plays into it as well as length. And like you said, if you're trying to make a short, accurate cast, you want a shorter rod. But if I'm, for instance, if I'm throwing like a lipless crankbait out over a giant grass flat, I'm picking up our 7.63 moderate fast, which was designed around an LV500 with John Pearl out in Clear Lake. And that thing, if you throw a half ounce lipless on that and you have a you know, a decent bait caster, you can basically spool the reel. It's actually insane. It's like you will never cast, have a more effortless cast than with that, you know, that longer length. That 7.6 allows you to really get it out there. And it, obviously, again, the longer the rod, the further you're going to be able to cast.
Yeah, that's a good point. Christian, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I wanted to give you a few minutes. Where can people follow you and your social media if you do it for your own personal use?
Yeah.
And also Douglas Rods.
Okay. Well, Douglas Rods, just Douglas Outdoors. We have two different Instagram accounts. Just, you can find them on the Douglas Outdoors website, but you know, hit me up on the, I'm on the spinning cast side. My fishing Instagram is Big Fish Synergy. And it's a lot of big bait fishing, a lot of, I target really big largemouth. That's my favorite thing to fish for. And then my personal Instagram is just Christian Colabelli. That's all my guitar stuff. I came over from the music industry. So if you want to see some shredding and some, you can check out both. I just want to talk about one more thing. We just dropped this arrow lineup, and I know, I know these guys, everybody was asking before, some of those questions before, like, you know, I would say if you're not as familiar with this and you want the best bang for your buck, I mean, these are there are six rods in this lineup. There are four casting and two spinning, and this probably covers 95% of all bass fishing, this lineup. And the rods are $99 each, and it's a lifetime warranty. And
that's crazy.
They are so light, so balanced. I've sent them all over the place. Our pros are fishing right now. They're blown out of the water with the performance of these rods, and it's not a big investment. Think about that. For $99, six rods in the lineup. For $600, you have your entire bass lineup. You're good to go, pretty much. Unless you're going to throw specialized, like dedicated swim bait stuff, which maybe we'll add one of those in the future. But please check those out. I did a bunch of. When I came over to Douglas, that's pretty much what I worked on. You know, everyone's selling them now. I did all the content with Ryan Miller for Fish USA. You could see all of our videos up there showing these things off. We're, you know, boat flipping fish in, catching glide bait fish on these things and catching them on every technique. And the cool thing about this is it kind of eliminates or alleviates a lot of the strain of not knowing what these rods are for, because we actually have a decal on these rods saying what they're intended for, even though you could fish a lot more technique on them. Like this 7.45 is spinnerbait / swim bait.
Yeah.
You know, so you have two techniques that you can see right on the rod that it would be optimal for. I mean, obviously talked about it before, but a great jig rod. Great bang for the buck, and we got you covered, lifetime warranty. That's a good way to get into Douglas without getting to, you know, having option paralysis take over. I mean, obviously I'm here. I'll answer any question that you guys have. Armando will give my contact info, but I mean, that's the gateway into our lineup, this new era.
There you go. Christian, thank you so much for taking the time to join the podcast, man. I really appreciate it. I know you're super busy. You know, you're in the East Coast, so it's a little bit later for you than it is for me. So thank you again for taking the time, man.
All good, my man. I'm happy to be here, and it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. And follow Armando in his fishing his fishing
adventures.
Yeah, man, it's awesome stuff, dude. I gotta get out there and fish. I'm coming to fish with you, man.
When are you coming to Texas? Please don't tell me you're waiting for next year's Classic.
No, I'll come down whenever you tell me it's good. I'll make a trip. Dude,
whenever you want.
All right.
I got a trip going to Alaska with my brother-in-law. We're gonna do some salmon fishing. Yeah. I need to get my hands on some of the Sky G fly fishing rods.
Dude, you do. And if you ever want again, like one more thing that I'm gonna leave you guys with this tidbit because it's so interesting to me. Douglas, the history of Douglas is very interesting. Yeah. I mean, our owners own 3 miles or close to 3 miles of the Salmon River. And they actually have riparian rights on the river. The land was given to them by George Washington. So these are original settlers of America that are steeped in this tradition. And it's been a big part of their life. And I mean, if you want, you know, if you want to come up and salmon fish, the Douglaston salmon runs right there. I mean, we've got the land, we've got the gear, we got great float rods, got great fly rods on top of the bass stuff. And that's a cool thing about our lineup. We're a multi-species lineup, as Armando will, I'm sure, attest to. But pretty cool.
That's another thing. Like, we didn't touch it on the podcast because this is mostly bass fishing. But your fly fishing rods for salmon it's incredible. I use them for striper fishing down the Brazos River, and I love them. Jacob Jenkins, we go fly fishing for stripers with your rods, and it's amazing.
That's so cool, man. Dude, we got to get some content of that. That's awesome, man. Yeah,
I'll send you some. But I appreciate it, Christian. For those out there that are listening and watching, we really appreciate it. Once again, check out our sponsors, Norse Coliseum, Douglas Outdoors, the amazing rods. Dark Horse Tackle and Catch Outdoors. For Dark Horse Tackle, remember, you can go to their web. You can hit the link on my social media. Go to the link. You can save $5 by building your own box. By building your own box, you inherently save money rather than buying the baits separately. You don't have to do a subscription, although you could. And on top of the inherited the savings you get from building your own box, you also get $5 off using BKB5. Also, Catch Outdoors, you can hit the link on our website or our social media account. Use promo code BKB5. Save yourself 5% on all sales on Catch Outdoors. So thank you for listening. If you're going to be on the water, please wear your PFDs. Take care, everyone. Have a great weekend. Peace out.
Thanks, everyone. Peace.